Hare Krishna. Well, here we are on the first day of Prabhupada Marathon, at least here, and actually I got also a signal yesterday, or this morning, that it has also started yesterday. Excuse me, this is the second day. Yesterday was the first day. In Wales, and I'm not sure when the starting date is in the UK and other places, but whenever it is, all the best. And we'll just speak a little about that just a little later, but here's three questions from Dayanitai Das. He says, we read in the Bhagavatam how great devotees sometimes curse Narad Parikshit, Narad Muni, Chitra Ketu, even though they possess the power to defy the curses. These devotees prefer to accept their curses in order to allow Krishna's plan to unfold. Had they chosen not to accept their curses, how could they have done so? Because they had superior power. Particularly in the example of Parikshit Maharaj, Narad Muni. Krishna describes in to Uddhava that of mystic powers there are two types. There are the original spiritual mystic powers, which are his own mystic powers, and then there are the material prototype, or material series, excuse me, copies or shadows of those, the abbas of those. The materialistic yogis and who all aspire for mystic powers, they acquire all of those. Only those who are transcendentalists, who, as Krishna explains, for instance, in the Gita, attains unto a nature like my own, those who become fully Krishna conscious, as a result of their Krishna consciousness, all mystic potencies naturally become manifest in the body of a devotee. And those mystic potencies are Krishna's original spiritual potencies, of course, to a less degree than they're present in Krishna, but because they are original, they are very, very powerful, much more powerful than their abbas or their shadow. Well, just compare a real form to the shadow of a form. So there's a real difference between the two. So Parikshit Maharaj was a Mahabhagavata. Narada Muni is one of a kind. They have original spiritual potencies, as does Maharaj Chitraketu. And on the basis of those original spiritual potencies, they can counteract, for instance, in the case of Parikshit Maharaj. Sringi is just a materialistic Brahmin. He's not a spiritually advanced personality. Therefore, the spiritual potency that he possesses, or the mystic power that he possesses, is material, or at least materially tainted, at best, excuse me, materially tainted. And so it can't compare to the mystic power of Parikshit Maharaj. But because Parikshit Maharaj thought, why should I protect myself? Just like Srila Prabhupada in his passing away from this world, he could have employed different types of medication. Perhaps he could have invoked his own mystic powers in order to protect himself from such a lesser thing as simple physical inconvenience, but he didn't choose to do so. If Krishna wants to do it, then let him do it. And if Krishna doesn't want to do it, then I'm not going to do it. That way it will become clear what really is Krishna's will. So, as I think I mentioned just recently, it's a issue of pure devotion. Pure devotees like to exclusively depend upon Krishna. And even though they can save themselves in situations that are not good, they don't necessarily choose to do so because they just leave it up to Krishna. He can do it, but why should I do it? If it's a situation where it's obvious that we shouldn't disturb Krishna for something like that, then we leave it up to him. But when it's not, then we don't leave it up to him, then we do it ourselves, because Krishna has given us the intelligence and so on in order to do the needful, to manage our lives. But when things become indicative that this is some very serious situation, that I'm not meant to actually necessarily just sort of meddle in this, that there's especially some higher purpose behind it, and it appears that there's really some higher purpose behind all of this, and Krishna is the one who should say how he wants things to unravel, then devotees don't act. Like one example where things did go a different way was Bharat Maharaj. The Bharat Maharaj was caught by these dacoits. He could have also freed himself. But he just left it up to Krishna. Well, if this is Krishna's plan, then let it happen. But it wasn't Krishna's plan. So, because he didn't act, therefore, Kali, Krishna inspired Kali, told Kali, you should dispose of these so-called worshippers of yours and protect my devotee. And she did. So, that's the answer to the first question. The second is, we know the residents of the spiritual world are oblivious to the fact that Krishna is God. Whom do they accept and recognize as being God? Sometimes there are references to Lord Narayan, and sometimes the gopis refer to the creator as Lord, being Lord Brahma. Yes, they refer to Brahma as the creator, but everyone knows that the creator is not God. The creator is just the creator. And the Brijbasis in the material world and in the spiritual world are aware, their general conscious and state of being is that Lord Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they worship him as such. On occasion, for the sake of pastime, they become aware that actually Krishna is just like Narayan, or even the source of Narayan, but that's not part of their day-to-day life. Part of their day-to-day life is worshipping Lord Narayan directly, incarnations of Lord Narayan, like Lord Varaha, Nrisingadev, and so on. And that is their, aside from the fact that they're also worshipping demigods, that is their consciousness, that is their approach to life. They're simple people who, even in Goloka Vrindavan, they don't think that they're living on Goloka Vrindavan. They think that they're living on earth. They think that they're living in the material world, that they're people bound by karma, and that Krishna is the best thing that happened to their lives. And that's their mood and mentality. And in the meantime, there's a creation and a destruction and demigods in charge who should be given respect, but there's a Supreme Personality of Godhead above that all. They're all thinking like that also in the spiritual world. And that's what makes it very sweet. There's unpresumptuous. There's no assuming any type of position other than that of just being ordinary people. That's the Brijvasis. Then his last question is, he's asking that in Bhagavatam it says that at the time of dissolution, Lord Brahma with the inhabitants go directly to the spiritual world. How does this reconcile with the fact that in other places it says that conditioned souls, after falling from the spiritual world, take the first birth as Lord Brahma? Does Brahmas automatically go back, or do they actually, we, being Brahmas at some particular point, have to really practice Krishna consciousness in order to achieve perfection of going back home, back to Godhead? this whole topic of living entity first taking birth as Brahma, and when it comes into the material world, is so unelaborated upon that it's hard for me to elaborate on it, other than accept the fact that that's how it is. And what here is being quoted is also how it is, and how the two things are reconciled. I haven't really given it much thought or done any research or know of Srila Prabhupada having spoken about it at any length. So my answer would be that living entities, when they appear as Brahma, they obviously also appear at the birth of Brahma, or at least at the day of Brahma, and here the final creation is being spoken about. So there's a adjustment. There's chronological adjustments according to individual entities' karmas that no doubt is taken into consideration. And that's one factor. I'm just looking for a necklace of Srimati Radharani that seems to be missing right now. But the main point is that they happen. Sometimes we may not understand exactly how everything happens that's stated in the Bhagavatam. And that's not necessary for us to be able to do that, because Bhagavatam is for very advanced, spiritually realized people, and we're progressing along the path of devotional service, and as we go along, we'll get to understand more and more, and we'll be able to resolve these things as we become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. In the meantime, you guessed it, our main business is to chant Hare Krishna, and understand those things that are very sort of straightforward and don't appear to be contradictory to us in any way, such as our identity as being spirit souls. And in that way, gradually, as our hearts becomes purified, what we'll need to know, we'll certainly come to realize in time. One comment is that, separate from this on the marathon, is that in the evenings I'm speaking at 8 o'clock to Hungarian devotees. Keshav Bharti Maharaj will be speaking at 7:30 to English-speaking devotees from Hungary. It's going to be coordinated. I'm also open to talking to devotees from Wales, Scotland, UK, Ireland, if they like to. However, there needs to be some kind of rotor system. I can't have more than one person phoning between the other things that are going on from outside of Hungary. So I'm going to ask... I haven't asked her yet, but I'm asking her now. I'm going to ask if Varshana can coordinate, Devidasi can coordinate that. And if devotees want to call in, then they can get in touch with her. She can give them a particular date, and that it around, say, 9 p.m. my time, which is 8 p.m. devotees' time. And then if that time devotees phone, who'd like to have a little chat about Sankirtan, if I can help in any way, then you can please give me a ring. And that's it for today. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.